DC, where LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks himself is waiting for us. Very good morning to you, Simon.
Hello, Matt.
I'd just like you to put into some sort of context for us the significance of this man, because he was the presidential nominee for the Republican Party that lost to President Barack Obama back in 2008. He's been a very significant figure as well as a senator. He's had a powerful social media presence. He was a POW, a prisoner of war in Vietnam, as we're hearing about in that clip during the news. Just how big a figure is he, and what will the reaction be in America?
Well, I think the reaction is going to be seismic, and we're going to be witnessing it not just over the next few hours, but over several days as the United States remembers a man who was a fixture in Washington since he was first elected back in 1982. An iconic American figure in many ways because of that experience that he had, that awful, searing experience as a prisoner of war in Vietnam, undergoing torture, not having enough to eat, coming back from that experience when so many others were killed in the process. A real American hero, he's viewed as by the vast majority of Americans. President Trump, of course, took issue with that view of John McCain. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But also, I think he's inevitably going to be remembered as an extraordinarily influential voice here, and a foreign policy voice in particular. But a voice that was never hesitant to speak out in his role as senator from Arizona, the state that he loved. It is fitting, I think, that the news of his death was announced by his Senate office. They put a statement out saying that Senator John Sidney McCain III died at 4:28 p.m. That's around 9:30 p.m. in London on August the 25th, 2018. With the senator when he passed were his wife Cindy and their family. At his death, he had served the United States of America faithfully for 60 years. And I think that third sentence, reflecting on 60 years of public service to the United States, is not just the way in which the McCain family and Senator McCain himself wanted to be remembered. He'd said that he had lived an extraordinarily full life for which he was extremely grateful, but it was a life of service to the United States. And I think there's also no question that the memories and the tributes that will be paid to John McCain over the next few days will be all the more heartfelt because of the very time that we're in now, the time in which he's died. There are not many John McCains up on Capitol Hill these days. There are not old-style Republican members of the Senate, or Democrats for that matter, who believe in the process of compromise, the process of discussion, the process of debate, finding common ground where you can with your opponents. And that's one of many reasons why he was so witheringly critical of President Donald Trump. And let's be clear, Matt, the death of Senator McCain creates a real political problem for the Trump White House. The McCain family made it clear some months ago that Donald Trump will not be welcome to attend his funeral. Remember that President Trump is the man who poured scorn on the notion that John McCain was a war hero in the run-up to the 2016 presidential election, saying to an audience that he's only a war hero because he was captured. I prefer my heroes when they aren't captured. And that just was part and parcel of a dreadful relationship that the two of them had. They held each other in absolute total contempt because they were at polar opposite ends, not of the political spectrum, but of the philosophical spectrum in terms of their approach to government. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the White House now handles all of this.
He's had quite an extraordinary career, John McCain, not just, of course, as a prisoner of war, as we've been saying, in Vietnam, and Americans love their veterans, which is why it's so particularly controversial that Trump was pouring scorn on his claims in that regard, but also in office since 1987, as I understand it, 31 years, over three decades, I think right up until his death almost, if not his death itself. He was chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Simon. How does Trump Trump play this then, given that, as you say, John McCain's said that his, or his family have said that they don't want him at the funeral? How does Trump play this? Can he find it in himself to be diplomatic in this moment?
Well, he certainly wasn't over the last couple of days, as we learnt the news that Senator McCain had halted his treatment for this very aggressive brain cancer that he'd been battling over the course of the last year. Indeed, there were reports here today that President Trump had told aides that he had no regrets whatsoever about the language that he had used to describe Senator McCain, and that he had no plans to speak in any way or offer any kind of message of support and sympathy to the family before John McCain died, which was an astonishing thing to hear a president of the United States say about a genuine giant on the legislative and political stage here in Washington, and a giant who comes from his own party. I mean, we saw every single member of the Senate, Democrat and Republicans, reaching out to the family, offering sympathy, many members of the Senate heading to Arizona in the last few months for what they knew was going to be, likely to be, their final meeting with Senator John McCain. And yet President Trump, even in the last 48 hours, digging in his heels and saying, no, I'm not reaching out to the family. I will make my statement when he dies. This is the same President Trump, by the way, who took a very, very long time to show a White House aide the door when, during a policy meeting at the White House, she, at one, another person in the room, raised the issue of, you know, Senator McCain was opposed to the particular issue of policy that they were talking about. And her response was, well, that doesn't matter. He's dying anyway. And that completely outraged the family, and not just the family. It outraged the common sense of decency that the vast majority of people in the political firmament in Washington, D.C. share, regardless of their political outlook. So this is going to be tough for the White House, and it's going to be tough because the public reaction to this, I think, is going to be deep. I think it's going to be abiding. There is no doubt that they will want to. I think certainly the Senate will propose that John McCain should lie in state on Capitol Hill before his funeral, whatever funeral arrangements ultimately are made and announced by the family. This is a man who ran for the presidency for the Republican Party in 2008, would have had a real chance of winning the presidency if he hadn't made the biggest political mistake of his life, which was appointing Sarah Palin to be his running mate as his vice presidential candidate, a decision that he bitterly regretted and later spoke out about.
And Simon, let me ask you about that, if you will. There was a sense, perhaps before that appointment, an astonishing appointment of someone seen as very, very much on the right-wing fringes of the Republican Party. There was perhaps a feeling before that appointment that although there was huge support, obviously, on the left for Barack Obama, and there would have been great disappointment had he not become the first black or mixed-race American president, it wouldn't have been a disaster for people more on the left of American politics had McCain become a Republican president. And was I right earlier when I said that he does somehow speak out, speak to people across the political divide, perhaps in a way that not many American political figures are able to do?
Well, as you ask me that question, Matt, I'm getting an email in my inbox from the office of Barack and Michelle Obama, who can probably say it better than I can. Their statement on the passing of Senator John McCain, this is what they write. This is what Barack Obama writes. John McCain and I were members of different generations, came from completely different backgrounds, and competed at the highest level of politics. But we shared, for all our differences, a fidelity to something higher, the ideals for which generations of Americans and immigrants alike have fought, marched, and sacrificed. We saw our political battles even as a privilege, something noble, an opportunity to serve as stewards of those high ideals at home and to advance them around the world. We saw this country as a place where anything is possible, and citizenship as our patriotic obligation to ensure it forever remains that way. And then Barack Obama goes on to write, few of us have been tested the way John won once was, that, of course, a reference to his time in Vietnam, or required to show the kind of courage that he did. But all of us can aspire to the courage to put the greater good above our own. At John's best, he showed us what that means, and for that, we are all in his debt. Michelle and I send our most heartfelt condolences to Cindy and their family. So that's the statement coming from Barack Obama. Just going to check my email again. There is nothing yet from the White House paying tribute to John McCain from President Trump.
And Simon, let me just quickly jump in on that, because I think that rather brilliantly illustrates the very weird political times we are in America. There's an argument to say it's being mirrored in a sense in this country. We'll leave that conversation for another day. The reason I say that is because these eloquent and generous words at the death, marking the death of a man who many would see as a great Republican, are coming from the mouth of a Democrat. And as you have just said, nothing yet from the office of the Republican president, a man who shares the same political party as John McCain. And that, in any other era of American politics, would be quite remarkable. The fact that it isn't remarkable now is a sign of just how far Donald Trump has fallen in the eyes of many. Not everyone, because he has a huge fan base, but in the eyes of many, the way he has changed the feeling, the feel of the office of the presidency.
Yes. I mean, I would make the point, Matt, that I think it's actually important to see it as remarkable and not to see it as unremarkable, because to see it as unremarkable suggests that there's something normal about what's taking place here. There is nothing normal about what's taking place. There has been nothing normal about it since the moment Donald Trump walked into the White House. And Republicans on Capitol Hill, many of them, you know, firm supporters still of President Trump, were very close friends of John McCain, and this is going to test them as much as all the other stuff that's going on here regarding President Trump's mounting legal woes and his mounting legal jeopardy. They, I think, are going to want to see some sense of contrition from President Trump over the way in which he treated John McCain. And just to answer your earlier question, he was indeed, at his death, still a member of the Senate. He made his last speech on the Senate floor last year, and it was a deeply moving and emotive occasion as he spoke very articulately about the need for compromise and the need to try and find a way for both parties to work together in the best interests of the American public rather than digging in and adopting polarized positions from one another. That, again, in and of itself was a slam at Donald Trump. But he was a sitting member of the Senate until his death. And now it will fall to the governor of Arizona to decide how to fill his Senate seat. There are some suggestions that perhaps his widow, Cindy McCain, may be offered an opportunity to take up the seat, at least over the short term.
Simon, let me just, before I let you go, touch on the most remarkable, most extraordinary week. So use those words again in relation to Trump. No surprise there. That this is a strange, strange end to what has been a very, very difficult few days for the president. Michael Cohen, of course, his personal lawyer for I think just over a decade, pleading guilty to criminal offences this week. And Paul Manafort, who was Trump's campaign chairman for 5 months back in 2016, during what many would describe as, I suppose it was all crucial, but a crucial period in the run-up to the election. He's been found guilty on no fewer than 5 counts of tax fraud. These are two men who were once in the very innermost chambers of the Trump confidants, and they are now both guilty. Either they've pleaded guilty or been found guilty of criminal offences. Where does this lead Donald Trump, and where do we go potentially with impeachment?
Well, and also, by the way, they're both going to jail. And in the case of Paul Manafort, he faces up to 80 years Indeed. In jail just for the conviction that has already been notched up. And he's got another trial right round the corner next month here in Washington, D.C. Bear in mind also that the chief financial officer of the Trump Organization, Alan Weisselberg, has been granted immunity from prosecution. And, you know, between Michael Cohen and Alan Weisselberg, those are two men who know everything there is to know about the inner workings of Trump world and about Donald Trump's secrets. They are the men who made his problems go away, and they now appear ready to talk to prosecutors. As far as impeachment is concerned, look, that's not on the cards, at least until November, when we have to see the outcome of the midterm elections here. If the Democrats take control of the House of Representatives, they could certainly begin an impeachment process. There's also a bigger legal question here, which is, can the President of the United States be charged with crimes? Can he be indicted? That's never been fully tested
Am I right in saying that he can under state law, but not under federal law?
Yes, definitely under state law that would be possible. I mean, absolutely possible he could be indicted under state law, although it would then be argued that he wouldn't be able to face trial until after he had left office. But the real question that everybody is keen to know the answer to is, can the Department of Justice, led currently by Jeff Sessions, whom the president assails on a daily basis, can it actually bring criminal proceedings against the President of the United States? And as The Economist points out, in a fantastic editorial this weekend, up until now, it hasn't been necessary really to test that question, because the baseline assumption that the system has made is that the man in office would ultimately have enough public decency and enough of a sense of shame that if he found himself faced with that question, he would quit. That's what Richard Nixon did.
Trump, of course, has changed the rules on that just very, very finally. And in a sentence or two, Simon, just to follow this thought of impeachment through to a conclusion, if he were to be impeached, if the Democrats were to take control of the House of Representatives, if they were to start up impeachment proceedings, if it were then to get to the Senate, there still needs to be a two-thirds majority of senators for him to have been successfully impeached. And I would have thought instinctively, given that the Senate will still have a very sizable Republican proportion of senators within it, even after the midterms, I suspect that is unlikely to be a level that is ever reached.
I think you're absolutely right in that assessment. Remember that Bill Clinton was impeached by the House of Representatives, not by the US Senate, on the issue of perjury with regard to the Monica Lewinsky scandal. So you can be impeached by one chamber and your presidency can survive. There's no question, though, that where we are right now, Donald Trump is skating on much thinner ice than he was just a few weeks ago. And it is perfectly possible that the ice will thin even further in the weeks ahead.
Simon Marks, thank you very much indeed. Absolutely fascinating as ever to talk to you. Sad news then this morning that we bring you, that Senator John McCain, the Republican senior senator for Arizona, has died at the age of 81.